Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Dani Sheriff, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. Hey, are you trying to recover and maybe even fall pregnant naturally? I thought that might be you. And if so, we have created our best ever yet resource for you. Totally free. This is a masterclass. I've called it my masterclass because I have put everything into this, right? This masterclass is designed for you if you have HA or have had HA and are dealing with suboptimal cycles and you're serious about restoring those babies to full optimization and you want to create the ideal foundation for a pregnancy. This is going to be for you. So in this masterclass, I'm going to provide you a lot of things, including a lot of case studies, mine, Ashley's and Mishi's, as well as lots of our past clients and what their challenges were and what they had to do to overcome it. And we cover a really wide variety of types of cases of HA. So everything from primary amenorrhea and missing periods for years and years to short-term amenorrhea and what we did to handle that situation as well, and how long it took these people to go from HA to pregnant with this system, and how long it took them to go from HA to ovulating, of course, with this system. So lots of information, lots of case studies, lots of stats. We go through why this is not a weight gain plan and how we actually divide you into phases, the three phases of HA, and determine what your starting point is so that you have a good idea of where you need to start with your actual changes in lifestyle and nutrition changes. We even cover questions like HA and people with a normal BMI and recovery for people who have had HA for too long. There's so much in this 60-minute masterclass. Y'all, I'm impressed. And at the end, I'll also be running you through how to get a free HTMA, hair tissue mineral analysis through us, which is a part of our process for recovery and preconception clients that we're happily going to give you for free $99. As a massive thank you, of course, for joining the masterclass. So go to thehasociety.com/masterclass or head to our website and you'll find a link for it and find when the next available presentation is going to be. That's thehasociety.com/masterclass. Hey guys, welcome back to the HA podcast. We have a recovery story today. I'm keen for you guys to hear this one because I got to work with Gail Trumpke at the time, Gail Powell, for a while, and just was like one of those cases that I was just like so excited for her to get to the other side and experience recovery. And she has, you know, a unique story. Like everyone has their own unique story, but I know that she's going to have so much insight to share. Just from, she did so much research and she went down this rabbit hole and that rabbit hole, and she has a vegetarian background, and there's just so much in this story. So first of all, welcome to the show, Gail.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited for you to be here too. This is going to be a really, really good one. No pressure. let's just get straight into it. Will you tell everyone, first of all, kind of just like who you are, where you're from, where you are, and where your story begins, and just like take us on the journey?
Absolutely. So hey, everyone. My name is Gail. I'm 29, currently living in Boston. My story, I feel like really like the crux of it begins in high school, but probably started much earlier. I guess for full background context, I grew up as the oldest of four siblings, with a very type A, very loving, but very type A mom who definitely controlled food and exercise a lot. And my dad was sort of out of the picture for a lot of my childhood years, struggling with alcoholism, in and out of rehab. So I sort of became the like parentified oldest child who, you know, really acted as a second parent and was very much like my mom's right-hand woman and had to control a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have had to control at the time. So I think like for me, control became very much like a coping mechanism early on in life. And so, you know, this all feeds into the story, but in terms of like actually struggling with like food and body image that I vividly remember, it was in high school, freshman year. I don't remember what set it off, but we were a big cereal household. Like we would have every like Fruit Loops, like every cereal ever. And at the time, my mom was really into the Special K cereal, which I don't know if everyone's familiar with it, but it was a big like fad, like diety brand, like in the probably late 90s, early 2000s. And they were advertising on the back of their cereal box, this Special K diet, which was like, you only ate Special K products for like 2 or 3 months. And you were supposedly supposed to lose weight. So, you know, you would have Special K bars for breakfast or snacks, and then there are cereals. And like, I think they had crackers, like they had whatever, all these packaged Special K products. And I don't really remember why, but I was like, I'm going to do this Special K diet. Like this just, I like their cereal. Like this sounds like a good idea. And this is probably, you know, like when like you're starting to pay attention to boys more and like things like that, freshman year of high school. So I did the Special K diet and it like very much quickly developed into a very bad case of anorexia where I was, you know, able to control exactly how much I was eating because it was all packaged food. So I could see like this bar is 90 calories, this whatever. And so I just tried to limit it as much as possible, eat as few Special K products a day as possible. For a long time, 3-4 months, lost a lot of weight very quickly because I was still running track and dancing. I think also like my dance career very much influenced the eating disorder as well. Just like being in a leotard with other small women all of the time. Running is also a sport that like, you know, skinnier equals better. So there was just a lot going on. I had like boyfriends and all the things. And so at some point I was really skinny and my parents never really said anything. Like no one really said anything to me. I mean, I think some folks may have expressed some level of concern, but I don't really remember anyone intervening too hardcore. And this was also around the time that I went on birth control. So I'm like in 9th or 10th grade at this point. And, you know, I have a boyfriend and my mom's like, get on birth control. So I had a period, like I got my period in 6th grade and I presumably lost my period at some point during this window, but I don't know exactly when because the birth control was masking it already at that point. And so, yeah, so I one day was in dance class and this was probably late junior year. So I'd had this bad case of anorexia for at least 1.5 years now. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror and being like, you look crazy. Like I, something in my mind switched and I was like, I look so bad. Like I was so, so skinny, so emaciated. So like at that point I was like, okay, I need to like eat more. And like, I actually stopped dancing my senior year of high school. It was just like a toxic environment for me. My parents were really supportive. So that was like a hard decision, but I stopped dancing. I continued to run, but at least that was like one activity off of the, you know, plate, and then started eating more and like gradually gained weight. Probably never honestly to the weight that I was, but I kind of remained small for the next 10 years, but to a much more healthy weight, right? Where people aren't stopping you on the street and being like, what's going on? But I still looked very skinny. So that's sort of like the high school story. This never really, again, fully got addressed. Like I never went to therapy. I never really worked through any of this. And so I go to college, a very competitive college, same thing. It's like everyone's small, everyone's doing a million things all the time. Like you control everything. And so I think these habits were just sort of like celebrated and ingrained and like over and over again, I was applauded for like doing the most and having the most things on my resume and running the most and sleeping the least and, you know, all the things society likes to commend. So, yeah, so that basically continued on. I started my first job in like a very like elite, so to speak, consulting firm where you worked a million hours and no one had time for meals and everyone woke up at 4 a.m. to go to the gym. And like, that was just the norm. And I don't know, it's just like my identity and my life and just kind of what I thought was normal. And I would say like over the course of the post-grad years, like I definitely started to develop like other symptoms. Again, I never was bleeding because I was on birth control and I thought that was normal, but like I developed like really bad digestion issues, which I was like, oh, I have a digestion problem, you know, or it was very hard for me to sleep. I had like bad insomnia. I was like, oh, I'm just too stressed, or like all these things that I now, knowing everything I know, can attribute back to HA, but I just didn't know that at the time. And so, let's see, I got engaged, in June of 2022 and got off birth control shortly thereafter. Cause I was like, I'm engaged now. Like if something happens, it happens. Right. And my period just never came back after, you know, the few months that they sort of promised that it would, which made me concerned. So I went to, like a random OBGYN. My insurance has changed like every year for various reasons. And so I didn't have an established relationship with anyone. I go to this lady, I'm like, I don't have my period. She's like, oh, okay. Well, like you're pretty skinny, but like you're super healthy. So like, why don't you just like gain 5 pounds, come back in a few months, like we'll check in. I'm sure everything will be fine. So I was like, all right, cool. So gained 5 pounds. At the same time, I had enrolled in, like an HA society type of thing, but more for like general women's health. And so it focused on everything from like nutrition to sleep to, you know, detoxifying your home. And so it wasn't HA specific, but it definitely touched on a lot of like women's hormones things. And so it was this 3-month course. And that really is what started to open my eyes to sort of like how disordered some of my habits were, or how like I was not feeling my body appropriately. Like no one had ever taught me how to eat, if that makes sense. So I was like, whoa, I'm not getting enough protein, or whoa, I'm not getting enough carbs. And so that individual who ran that program actually is the first one who brought up to me this like hypothalamic amenorrhea thing. And at the same time, I had gotten results back from the Dutch test I did with her, and also lab work I had done with my OB-GYN that showed that like my estrogen was like, I forget, like 6 or 7 or 10 or some super low number. And I was like, whoa, like maybe there's more to this than just like gaining 5 pounds and like maybe doing this hormone replacement therapy and IVF, whatever. So I started Googling around and like really doing a ton of research, and found Dani's podcast as the first resource I found, which is why it's so full circle to be here today. And like literally probably within a week, listened to almost every podcast that she'd ever done, to the point that my husband was like, this is crazy. Like, you can't listen to these podcasts anymore. Like, he's like, you know, everything it's been a week and you know, everything there is to know about this thing. Like, you've got to like create some separation. I was like, but you know, I was just so fascinated. Like no one had ever, it was just such a new way of thinking and viewing the world. And like, everything resonated with me so much. And no one had ever like described all this to me before in these sort of terms. And so anyway, around that time, I think we're in about like February of 2023 now, I reached out to Dani and was like, you know, I'm doing this general women's health program thing, but I think I need like really, you know, specialized coaching and support around HA specifically. And so it took a while to sort of like fully admit I have this issue, and it's going to take more than, again, gaining the 5 pounds to fix myself, so to speak, but I did it. And, yeah, I can go into the whole second part of like the recovery
story. Well, yeah. I mean, but real quick, that is a good part, a good thing to just quickly like sit on, is it took you a while. So like, what was the story around that? Like, what were the hangups that made it hard for you to basically commit to whatever it was that you really needed to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think for a very long time, it was just like lack of knowing that I wasn't healthy, right? Like I had thought all throughout high school and college, and even in my early adulthood, like I was healthy because I was thin and I was athletic and I was able to do everything that I wanted to do. Obviously now I know my body was not functioning in an optimal way, but at the time I like didn't, and I hadn't put all these puzzle pieces together. So I think like lack of knowing. And then I think once I saw my period wasn't coming back, like the alarm bells went off. Like I was very worried, but it took me a few months to find, like my OB-GYN didn't say anything about hypothalamic amenorrhea or like really talk about anything lifestyle related with me. She didn't ask anything about stress, nutrition, exercise. I'll also bring up, like, I travel like almost every week. And so like, that's a big stressor. Like, she didn't ask about any of this. And so, I think if I had heard the words I still can't say it, which is embarrassing, but if I had heard the words HA, earlier, I think I would have been like, whoa, I need to address this right now. But there was just some months of like not knowing. But I really, once I learned about HA, which was at the end of January, I reached out to you, I think like within a week, 2 weeks, I was like eager to like, whoa, I need to get this show on the road. So that's what I would say to that question.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, cool. All right. So you got to this point, and now let's talk about like what you had to go through, what you had to do, what you had to try. How was all that?
Yeah. So I get to this point and I think I didn't realize how long the road would be ahead because I didn't realize what a bad place I was in. Like I thought, right? Like I'm recovered from my eating disorder. Like I've gained the weight back. Like I have like, yeah, I really, really love to exercise, but like I have a good relationship with food. Like I was, you know, I was never one of the people at this point that was like trying to eat one snack a day. Like I was eating 3 or 4 meals a day. Like, yeah.
You were like eating at restaurants every day.
I was not counting my macros. I didn't have my fitness. Yeah. Like, so I was like, I don't have like a problem with food. Like, you know, all these things. And so I thought I was in a pretty good spot, but I think like starting this journey, like really made me realize again, like how disordered a lot of my behaviors or like abnormal a lot of my behaviors were. And so, I think, yeah, it was just a much longer journey than I expected. And I did have some obstacles in my way. Like, I think, I was born, and raised a vegetarian. And at the time was still having some of those gut issues that I was trying to address. So my diet was like, you know, relatively restricted compared to what would be like optimal in recovering for HA, which is like, you have no dietary restrictions and especially can like benefit from, you know, animal proteins and things like that. So I had that hurdle. As I mentioned, like the travel thing was really, still is really intense. So there's a lot of days where I just didn't have as much control over like my food intake or my sleep or whatever, because I was on the road for various reasons. So there was some obstacles, but I think like the biggest obstacle and the reason that it definitely took me too long or longer than maybe I could have recovered in is just like, I was getting in my own way, right? Like there was still some things, and Danny can probably comment on this, but like, I was definitely stubborn. Like there was some things I really felt strongly about that I wasn't willing to budge on. I think the food piece for me was much easier to sort of not give up on, but give into than the exercise piece. Like that was harder. So I remember telling Danny like, oh, I cut my steps from like 30,000 to like 15,000. Like I'm doing so good. And she's like, 15,000 is still like so many steps. Like that is not going to work, girl. And so I was making these massive, what I thought were massive changes, but they like weren't enough. And so that was like really hard to like sit with and be like, I have to go enough, like, you know, peeling back the onion. It's like another layer of stuff that I have to do. Like I felt like I was giving in and giving up so much.
I think this is like an important point too, because this is where that piece of like, it's so hard for us to see the forest through the trees, I guess. Like when you're used to such a, you know, for like random examples, such a high amount of exercise, such a like a high number of steps. So eating in such a restrictive way or eating in such a specific way, like going to 15,000 steps is a massive change. Like it is like introducing, you know, gluten, if you've never eaten gluten, like these are all things that are really huge. So you're sitting in it being like, I've given a lot. Like, yeah. So it's, and everyone deals with this. It's hard for us to be objective about like what, you know, how deep we're into this, maybe behaviorally or as a deficit. So people really struggle to basically coach themselves, right? Like even I, you know, I rely on Ashley and Mishi, you know, from time to time about like, am I being delulu about my ability to like do all these things? Because we just get so caught up in like comparing, you know, what we've been doing to what we're doing now, but actually we need to like, what does the average person do? Yes. And is that reasonable?
100%. No, I think that's like a really good point, and like why the coaching and the accountability of someone else's eyes on what I was doing was so important. Like I even remember with my food logs, like I was incorporating so many more carbs than I ever had, but like you were looking at them and you were like, girl, there's still a lot of vegetables there, you know? And I'm like, but there's rice in there and there's, and you're like, yeah, but there's also like 6 pounds of lettuce. And so it's like kind of having that other person like point out the things that you like either don't want to admit or are just like, so yeah, delusional in your own thoughts and you think are normal.
And that's also where we see like where you're focusing on the things that you have changed. This is super common, right? We're focusing on like, look at all the things I have changed, so we can conveniently not pay attention to the other things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's nice.
And I think like for me, you know, I always say like, oh, it took me like longer to recover because it was, you know, probably 10 months or 11 months. And I know lots of girls who have recovered in 8 weeks and whatever, but like, I don't think I could have done it in any shorter period of time. Like I had to titrate down with exercise and titrate up with the food in a way that like, okay, I did 15,000 steps today. It's going to be a, like, you know, two months later, I was like, okay, I can do 5,000 steps today. But like, I was not going to be able to go from 30 to five, right? Like that was too hard for me to like fathom in that moment. And so I had to wait to adjust till the new thing was my new normal before I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this next layer of the onion. And I think another complicating factor was like, I was getting married, right? So I had a like big wedding. I had bought this very expensive wedding dress. And so I was, and I knew like, I need to gain weight. I need to make these changes. And I again did make a lot of them, but I was like only willing to go to like a certain point. Cause I was like, I can gain weight and I'm like still in the process of getting my dress tailored, but like, I'm not buying a new dress. And like, that was definitely a sticking point too, that, you know, forced a little bit of a slowdown and was a reason I was unwilling to sort of let go on the final pieces. So I had, for example, given up all cardio, which is a big deal for me because I was like an everyday runner type of girl in February. But I was like, okay, I'm still going to do Pilates. I'm still going to take walks. Like I'm doing other sorts of exercise to like still feel comfortable in this like wedding body situation. And so it wasn't until I got back from my honeymoon in October where I was like, it's winter, the wedding's over. I don't care. I'm like, this quasi recovery, which I hate saying because in the moment I thought I was so all in, like, but looking back at it compared to what I did in those last few weeks, when I actually recovered my cycle, like it was quasi recovery. And so I think, when I got back from the wedding and was like, I truly am like, I'm not exercising at all. Like I will take my like little 15 minutes of sunshine walk, but I'm not doing a class of any sort. I'm not picking up weights, whatever. And then like, I really am going to eat every 3 hours instead of trying to push it to five or, you know, that's when I got my period back after like 4 weeks of doing that. So it's like, this probably could have, you know, really been shortened, but
it's like we were rehearsing everything that you were going to do for so long, you know, until that moment. That's so understandable, right? Like it's so understandable.
Yeah. And when I got back from my honeymoon, I literally said to David, like my husband, the next day I was like, I'm doing it. I was like, I know exactly what to do. I like Danny's voice in my head, like eat now, don't take the walk, girl. Like, you know, and I was like, I'm just doing it. And it worked and obviously paid off in dividends, but it was hard to get to the final mile for me. I'm pretty stubborn.
Hey, do you know what your blind spots are? As in, do you know what it is, what the thing is that is holding you back from getting your period back? Look, it could be an absolute plethora, cornucopia of things, but in our practice, the first place we tend to go is what behaviors and habits do you have around food that you may be still doing? And these are called blind spots because we just don't necessarily always know that they're an unhelpful habit, or that it's something that we're doing, whether it be a subconscious or conscious need to control our food or our body, or whether it be something that you've just done for so long that it feels normal and like a preference even. We have created a checklist. It's a 3-page checklist that goes through food types, behaviors around food, and mindsets around food.
And what you do is you go through the lists and you check off and you see which ones are you doing, whether it be daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and how are they potentially affecting your recovery today. So it's a really simple checklist. It's just 3 pages. You go through it. There's a very simple scoring system to help you figure out how much this may be impacting your recovery. And it's just an insightful thing for you to do to help you reflect, and then you can journal about it or you can learn more about it and just start really working at any of the boxes that you checked and understanding that they're playing a role in your recovery. So to get the checklist, all you have to do is go to thehasociety.com/blindspot and we'll send it straight through to you. You can print it off and you can check on it every now and then. I always recommend a reflection point every 4 to 6 weeks. How are you going? Are you still checking that behavior off, or have you, you know, systematically kicked it to the curb? So check it out. It's thehasociety.com/blindspot and it will be waiting for you there.
Yeah, well, I know. I don't think there's a lot of people listening that are I think it's a really understandable situation to go into recovery right before a wedding. Most people are not going to do it. People would be like, "Oh, I'll do this after," and that just is what it is. So you just took a bit of a roll the dice, because maybe I can do both, you know, and that we don't know. So you might as well try. But exactly what you were saying of you couldn't have done it any sooner. So had you waited to do essentially the mental work that you were doing, then you would get post-honeymoon and you might still be on that journey right now because you were like, oh no, I'm not going to do it to the wedding. So you actually, any step forward is bringing you closer. Even if someone listening also has a wedding, or someone listening is training for the Olympic Games and needs to make weight or whatever, you know what I mean? We understand, but it doesn't mean there's not valuable work you can do now. That means once it's go time and that event is over, you can still do it in 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 10 weeks. And exactly where you were at, you were so, you're just one of those people who was like, well, let's make this change and see. And then make this change and see. And part of that's just neurological rewiring. And I was the same way. And when people go go completely against all comfort, right? And go all in, sometimes their body got their period back, but their brain didn't adjust. And so now we have a whole new plethora of issues. And there's the emails I get, you know what I mean? Of I hate this body and I don't know what to do with it. I want to quit. And this is, when you really think about the grand scheme of things, to completely turn your health around and have your fertility and stuff, 11 months is okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such a good point. To anyone listening, just start, no matter what your thing coming up that you feel like you can't start because of it is, still just start, because you can control still, which we're trying to let go of control, people, but you really still can control the pace at which it moves. And you can take, no one is yelling at you if you take pauses when you need to, right? Or you're feeling really uncomfortable. And I think I am happy with the gradual approach, because it did give me time to settle in. I gained a significant amount of weight from start to now. But it's it happened over that 11 months, which was less jarring for me than if it had happened in 10 weeks. Right. And so it gave me time to be okay, I can kind of see myself here. I can kind of do this. Oh, I look kind of good. And then it just got easier with time. And I think that mental piece is so important, because that takes so much longer to cure than the physical symptoms or just getting your period back. It's that neurological rewiring you were saying, that's what requires the much longer than 8 week period or whatever to completely change. And so, I totally think people should just start and stop using excuses. And it's when it's your health and it's in this grave of a spot, I don't know how I could have not started. Even though I had these obstacles coming up, I was I have to do something to make progress. Cause that was the most uncomfortable place of all to be in for me, was okay, I'm in postmenopausal levels of hormones. That really shocked me to my core. And you know, made me reconsider everything and what my priorities were. So
yeah, it's like when you get faced with like, maybe I'm not invincible, like yeah. this is actually affecting me. And again, you know, yes, it takes that long amount of time, and in the moment it feels so arduous because like every day you're looking at this and thinking about it. So when that's happening for 11 months, like that's brutal. I mean, that's longer than a pregnancy, right? Yeah. Like that's a brutal amount of time. But when we really zoom out and we're like to go from where I came from to what I've achieved now, like absolutely, it's still the best possible route.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I think like for me, one of the hardest parts was doing something very different than everyone else was doing. And I know that, you know, society has sort of the wrong norms around a lot of this. And I would say the friend group and family that I am in is like on the very extreme side of like the healthy, fit, active girls. And so, you know, every single girls trip, every single time, like my girlfriends are like, instead of just going to dinner, like you want to like take a walk and then get dinner. Like there's always movement involved in every plan. And so, yeah, like, you know, doing that every day for 11 months of pushing back and being like, can we just get dinner and not do the walk? Or like, okay, I know no one else is going to eat for the next 10 hours, but like, I have to have breakfast. Like, and I'm not just having the fruit plate that you put out. I'm going to go like procure myself a bagel because fruit plate's not going to cut it. Like that was the most mentally draining for me. And I actually ended up right after my wedding, when I knew I was going to like fully commit and like make some crazy quote unquote changes.
Right.
I ended up writing a letter to like my A team, so to speak, my mom, my sister, and like my best friend. So it was like my 10 bridesmaids. And my mother-in-law and like a few other like women in my life that are very influential and very impactful. And I literally wrote out, and it was so helpful for me, like basically a synthesis of everything I had learned about HA. Like, what do I even have? How did this happen? What's going on? Like, what are all the things I'm struggling with right now? And then like what I was going to do over the next few weeks and my asks of them. And my asks of them were like, do not comment on my body. Do not ask me to do anything exercise related. Please like do just check in normally and like ask how I'm doing. Cause I'll probably need more support during this time than I have historically. Like, and it was amazing. And my, like everyone responded so well. Everyone knew at this point that I was struggling with this. So it wasn't like completely new news that I was hiding by any means, but it was like this synthesis of like, okay, ladies, I know I've like mentioned things here and there and I'm doing this and I don't have my period and blah, blah, blah. But like, here's the guide and like follow these instructions. And it was great because I didn't have my best friend saying like, oh, are those new jeans? You know, or like those little comments that you don't think are going to matter, but like when you're in the thick of it, matter so much. And that like, I think really helped me to, again, actually push through and complete this like all in phase of it, because I didn't have the little whispers in my ears, like tugging me in the other direction. So
almost like trying to get us to hide it too. It's such an underrated thing to do, is to share it with people. Everyone wants to avoid it. Everyone wants to be like, oh, maybe we can survive this under the radar. But the reason that you will struggle if you don't is because for so many people, the opinions of others is the problem. So, I mean, it was game changing. I did the exact same thing, to go and just like, well, whose opinions am I worried about? What would happen if I just told them?
Yeah.
And then like, you know, like we're all on the same page, like I would feel so much better, because it can almost feel like harboring a secret, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it was really empowering for me, because at least a few of the friends like reached out to me that they were also struggling with stuff. Like one of my friends had recently been diagnosed with PCOS. So she was like, you know, coping with what that meant for her fertility journey. I had one friend who was having super irregular cycles and wasn't sure what was going on. Right. And so like, I think as women, the more that we openly talk about this, because unfortunately it is so normal, not necessarily HA, but like HA dysfunction or PCOS or some other sort of hormonal issue.
Yeah.
The better it is, because we don't feel as alone, and like we really all can help each other. And now I've been like the rock for a few of these friends who are like, thank you for sharing your story, because that's allowed me to, you know, make progress with my own journey. And so, yes. Yeah. tell people. It's better that way.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't have to be like 10 bridesmaids, because no one except you has 10 bridesmaids. But, you know, yeah, like the main people, I mean, I chose to go, I just posted on the internet publicly, you mm-hmm. know, so it's like people can do whatever they need to do. But I love how that basically, you know, what do they say? Brené Brown, shame hides, what is like shame hides in the dark. Like, mm-hmm. but when you share the thing that you're feeling shame or embarrassment or uncertainty about, and now it's out in the light, it's so much harder for it to feel bad.
Yeah.
And it's way easier to execute. It's like, it's the most fascinating thing, and that everyone will force it down into their pit of their stomach. And then it will stop them from progressing past a certain point, because it's starting to get noticeable. People are going to start to notice, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, huge takeaway for sure. I knew there was going to be some good nuggets. Okay. So people would probably want some stats, a recap, and then tell us where you're at right now today. But so you didn't have a period for how long? We know you were kind of on your journey for roughly a year. And then when it was go time, it took you, did you say 4 weeks or 6 weeks?
4 weeks.
When it was go time. Okay. So yeah. How long did you not have a cycle for again, even though it was birth control-ish?
Like 15 years.
15 years. Then like a whole year journey. You have your vegetarian background. Like you have these classic, you know, like extra challenges, if you will, that make you want like, oh, is that a part of the problem? Is it okay? Okay, how do I work around this? And then where are you today?
Yeah. So I got back from my honeymoon mid October, went all in. I got my period on Thanksgiving. So like exactly a month later.
Wait, first of all, how did that go? Like did you just look in the toilet? Well, what happened? I love that spot.
Yeah. I also think there's something around like, you know, like women being around other women that are cycling, and you have women like cycle sync. I went to dinner with my super pregnant best friend who was like, you know, I'm going to pop any day. And I was like rubbing her belly. I was like, just give me your fertility juices. And I literally got home from dinner with her and I like had blood. And I was like, this is insane. Like what? But I was so convinced it wasn't actually a period. And I remember like messaging you, Danny, and being like, I don't know. Because it was really, really light. And so it was a period, but I definitely believe it was anovulatory because it was very light and it only lasted for like a day and a half or two. So like, yes, period, but it was anovulatory. So I was like, okay, great. Like, this is awesome. But like, I need to ovulate, you know, to be healthy and to be doing it right. So, but that was like a good motivation marker to like make me keep doing the same things I was doing and not change anything. Which I know some women, like once they get their first recovery period back, are like, okay, I can change things. But I was like, I can't change things.
Because
I didn't.
Because you did so much work in advance because you took your time with it.
Yeah. So then it's like mid December, and this was probably like cycle day, like 22. So I was freaking out, you know, cause I was very much tracking my cycle and was like, okay, I'm not ovulating. Like I haven't seen the temperature increase. Like I haven't seen this like ethereal mucus that everybody talks about. So I'm like, I don't know. I don't think, you know, it's going to work for me. And so I had, so kind of right before my wedding and everything, like actually gone down the, like, I'm going to get all the fertility testing because I was very keen on getting pregnant, like right after our wedding. And so I was like, I feel like I've tried this for a year, right? Or almost a year. Like I might just need a little boost, of like some oral medication. And so I had gone down all that whole route. So I went to, on cycle day 23, I went to the fertility clinic to take my baseline blood work so that they could prescribe me like, or to start Clomid or letrozole or whatever one they were going to use. And they were like, oh, you're like about to ovulate any second. I was like, what do you mean? And they were like, your estrogen is like, I forget, 280 or
something. Yes.
Like, they're like, so you can just like do some timed intercourse. Like if you don't get pregnant and you still feel like you need us, like, you know, call us in a month or two. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. So I left, which is just like such serendipitous timing. You know, I feel like it's the sign from the universe. Like you're about to be like, I can't do this. And then the universe was like, No, but you can.
Throw her a bone.
Yeah, exactly. And so I like went home and I was like, you know, hanging out with my husband, and that happened. And then literally on the 26th, the day after Christmas, I got a positive pregnancy test. So my first ovulatory cycle, we conceived on. So my first time ovulating in 15 years, which is just so crazy to me. And like, I told him, and he like, like on New Year's Eve, because he was away. So I had to wait.
Waited.
I wasn't going to tell him over the phone, but yeah, he came back from Idaho. And we hadn't exchanged gifts or anything yet. And so I put the little, you know, test in his stocking. He like opens it. He's like, I didn't even know you could do this. He's like, I didn't even know this was possible. I was like, I didn't really know either. Like, but I guess I'm fertile.
Were you just dying for him to open that present?
I was dying. And of course I put like socks and underwear and like toothbrush heads and all the like unsexy stuff. And then he like, it's just opening this thing, expecting it's going to be like floss, you know? And he's like, oh my God. So that was really cool. And yeah, now I'm like 16 weeks pregnant. So in my second trimester.
So cool. You have so much to associate now with the holiday season, like for the rest of your life.
I know. I'm like kind of bummed. I took a pregnancy test on Christmas, but it was still like two few days post-ovulation. So I got the like tiniest faint line, but I was like, there's no way, you know? But it would have been cool to find out actually on Christmas, but I'll take the 26th, you know, that works too.
Yeah. No, that's so cool. It's so cool. I love that story. Okay. Beautiful. So you are now pregnant. You did the thing. And I think that like a big takeaway is just start, because in the moment you felt a lot of feelings. Like there was a sense of hopelessness, you know, like at times, fear. Oh, I'm just going to go to fertility treatment. Like you went through all that, which is feelings that so many people listening have dealt with. And Sidell got to have the special moments of seeing the blood and then having a second cycle and getting pregnant on that second cycle. It's like,
no, it's
so
it's
worth it.
And you know, I think, and I was this person, like I listened to, you know, the 200 recovery stories on Danny's podcast and was like, it's just not going to happen for me. You know, like that self-doubt is like the number one thing that you have to work past. And it's like, you don't believe it until it happens, you know? And now I'm like the biggest believer and like, how could I have ever not thought, you know? But it's hard in that moment to push past that feeling, especially if it's taking a while of the hopelessness and the self-doubt. And that's why, like, I was scared, right? So I was like, I have to pursue like this whole, like all the diagnostic fertility testing, because like it's just probably not going to work. And it's like, how dumb was that, you know? But in the moment, like that self-doubt can really become so huge. And so just trust yourself and trust your body. Like they're so resilient. And I don't know. I'm still like in awe and like processing that this all happened, but it works. So.
So good.
So good.
This has been wonderful. I'm so happy that you were able to come on and share. And I'm so happy with the outcome of your story. It's just beautiful. And to be able to, every time someone inquires now about like, I'm vegetarian, you know, can I do this? Like, yeah, I mean, you did start incorporating more animal products, but like you never went ham on animal protein. You just started bringing like some cheeses and you would do like some eggs and it's possible.
It's definitely possible. And I definitely doubted that too, you know, just like the research. And do I think it would have been easier to recover with the animal proteins? Definitely. But I recovered with no meat, no fish. I did have like cheese and butter and eggs and stuff, but not in like an overwhelming quantity, like in a sort of normal amount. I think the biggest thing was just like the carbs for me. I feel like when you're a vegetarian and you're a healthy vegetarian, it's so easy to be super low carb.
And super high fiber and like,
yeah. And so I just had to like move away from like the massive salads and smoothies and stuff into like really incorporating like bread. Like I bought bread for the first time in like 15 years during this process. Yeah. I now have a sourdough loaf on my counter, which is exciting. But like, you know, that was just not normal. I was like, I don't like sandwiches. And my husband would always be like, what do you mean you don't like sandwiches? And I'm like,
everyone
I just
likes
don't
sandwiches.
Like bread. Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, what?
Yeah, I do.
So just gotta rewire the whole brain.
And I think it was great that you ate out a lot, you know, because like in order for a vegetarian food at a restaurant to be any good, like they're gonna put like a lot of fat in that, you know, they're gonna put like a lot of carbs. So I feel like that was actually a solid strategy for you.
Yeah.
And then you were doing, like you were doing cupcakes and you were drinking some wine and like doing all the things. So yeah, I think it paid off long term and this really cool anecdotes. And I think that you will be so helpful for so many other women in the future in your personal life. And I'm excited to see like how you impact other people's lives.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to play it forward.
Yeah.
I definitely couldn't have done it without coaching and without a community. So if you're thinking about joining the HA Society, you should.
Plug. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Gail. Really appreciate you sharing your story. Everyone else does too. And I hope you guys listening all have a great day and feel super inspired by this.
Thanks, bye. Everyone. Bye.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are, and that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure if you're trying to avoid pregnancy that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the Temp Drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the Temp Drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So Temp Drop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons like HA recovery, making sure your cycle is not slipping back in the HA direction, Temp Drop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the Temp Drop. And we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck. This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now. And the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day. And I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic, it's made from Australian beef, and my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society. Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.